Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Everybody, I think we're live. We should be live as we're getting ready for UFC London, which goes down tomorrow afternoon at the O2 Arena. I see people jumping in, so we are live. So if you're on the East Coast, some early morning preview show action. We are live. We don't have the bells and whistles because Casey Lydon. This is weigh-in day for our man Casey's getting ready to fight tomorrow, getting ready to beat some tukus and improve his amateur record to 1-0 with a devastating finish. But before that happens, the UFC will be back in action in London. So this is the live UFC London preview show here on MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Keck. We got the Prince of Positivity, AK Lee. And in London right now, rocking the Wu-Tang shirt is Mr. Jose Youngs. What's going on, my man? How is London this time of year?
London's cool, man. So a lot of people that I was like, if you've been to Boston, you've been to London in terms of like how the city feels and looks. All the roads are super narrow, cobblestones, like tall, super old, historic buildings. So everything is super spread out. It's not very easy to get around unless you're using the train. But yeah, it's no complaints. Driving on the other side of the road is a little weird. Threw me for a loop. But the only thing that's really affected me is my severe lack of sleep due to this jet lag, averaging a solid 2 hours a night. But that seems to be the trend with all the media here from stateside. We're all just sitting there just like, I'm so tired. And all the UK media are like, I don't want to hear it. This is how our pay-per-view nights are all of the time. Our pay-per-views end at 3 a.m. They start at like 2 a.m. for us. So I don't want to hear it. I'm like, yeah, all right, calm down. I'm just tired.
Oh, man. Yes, Jose is in London. He's far away. So the Wi-Fi could be a little choppy. So we're just gonna battle through at the end of the day. So we got a big heavyweight main event, a pivotal matchup. We got Alexander Volkov, the wily veteran, looking to get a step close to a title shot. And in his way is a guy that a lot of people are excited about in this division, and Tom Aspinall getting a hometown fight, getting a hometown main event. Big opportunity. Sort of a fight, AK, that he didn't really ask for. This is a guy who said he wanted the slow roll. He wanted to just go up the rankings one spot at a time. And here we are, taking on the massive, gigantic Alexander Volkov with the chance to make a real dent in this division. So your thoughts on this matchup? Are you surprised the UFC went in this direction when he has said many times, I'm in no rush to get to a title fight?
No, not surprised at all. I mean, it's like you said, Aspinall wasn't calling for a top 10 guy necessarily. Volkov certainly wasn't calling for an up and comer, someone who was going to, you know, who could come take his spot. But I think after the way both guys' careers have been going, this was a pretty predictable outcome. I think this was something on our matchmaking show, Mike, on to the next one. A lot of our listeners thought that this could be the next fight for Tom Aspinall. It just makes sense. You know, Volkov's certainly not someone who I would rule out of being in the title picture, and a win over Aspinall keeps him in there. It is, I'm sure if you're Volkov, you'd want, you know, a Derek Lewis rematch, preferably something like that. But I just don't know. You know, it's never felt like the UFC is particularly like thrilled about wanting to put that fight together again. It's also one that they could do further down the road. Right now, they want Aspinall. Obviously, they wanted him to headline UFC London. They wanted to give him a quality opponent, and so we end up with the Alexander Volkov fight. So there was certainly it was originally supposed to be Abdurakhimov, I think, right? He was going to fight him, but But was that going to be? Oh, but that wasn't going to be in the main event.
Okay. No.
So this worked out for Tom Aspinall as far as getting to headline in London, the first UFC card in 3 years in London. So in that case, it's a big deal, and the upside is very high for him. So I know he didn't want it, but I'm sure he's very much warmed up to the matchup, and it's not an unfavorable one for him either. I haven't looked at the odds. My guess would be Volkov is favored. So I guess we can talk about that in a bit.
Aspinall a slight favorite at -120.
So very, and I imagine that line could still move in between now and Saturday. But yeah, like you said, not a fight that necessarily he was calling for or that we saw coming a mile away. But I think after again their recent performances, we're like, yeah, this is a logical matchup to make, and a logical headliner for the London card.
This has, Jose, some interesting vibes on it, because if you look at it from a Jose Young's how do we like main events perspective, you would think that the co-main event might get this slot between Arnold mm-hmm. Allen and Dan Hooker. But mm-hmm. the UFC sees something clearly in Tom Aspinall, because mm-hmm. they're putting him in this spot. They want him to get that hometown rub. And if he goes out there and has a great performance, he does what he's done in his last several fights and finishes guys early, the reaction he's going to get is going to be one of those star-making reactions. So your thoughts on this booking, this main event, and the biggest fight of Tom Aspinall's career against a really tough opponent?
It's cool, man. It's obviously like Tom Aspinall is what this whole card is built around. But I've actually chatted with Tom a lot, just like off camera, off record. We bumped into each other in the lobby and stuff. And he's like, I'm just ready to fight. He really wanted to fight Volkov. Obviously, there was issues that maybe Volkov might not be able to get in the country. We saw Marcin Tybura weigh in today, so he was, I guess, apparently the backup. He's like, I don't want to fight Tybura. Nothing against him. I want to fight Volkov because he's the one. He's the name. He'll get me up the rankings. He's the one that's more known. He's a former champion in Bellator. Like, I specifically want to fight Alexander Volkov. And Alex Volkov has fought pretty much everyone at heavyweight. Like, if you look at his resume, he's pretty much fought some of the best across two divisions. So I actually think this is a high-level martial arts competition. Like, yeah, the co-main event is just a bananas. It's going to be like one of those insane fight of the night perform possibilities. But I love, like, it checks the Jose Young's box for high-level martial arts competition, because I was also like, Dan Hooker bumped into us when we were talking. We were all just kind of chatting real like quickly, and he's like, and Tom's like, you know what I hate getting asked right now? Oh, how are you preparing for 5 rounds, this and that? I'm like, well, I don't know. I've not made it out of the second round. I'm just up in my – I've never made it out of the second round. So this is all new to me. And Dan's like, you know what sucks? Fighting 5 rounds. Because you get through 2 rounds, and you're like, what? I still have 3 rounds to go? And Tom asked, like, that's why I don't want to let this get through 5 rounds. So Tom's in the right mindset. He's not taking this – like, he's taking this seriously, but he's not letting the seriousness, like, weigh on him. That's what I'm saying. Like, he is treating this as this was, he was on the first prelim or the last. He's not, the weight is not pushing down on him. So I think from this point, if he wins from this point on, I think it's main events, co-main events only from here on out. Like, he's going to headline main events for fight nights. And then possibly if he fights for the title, he's going to main event that, obviously, because he's the heavyweight. But Tom wins. This is his coming out party to really be one of those premier guys that the UFC can slot in the top two spots of the card for the next foreseeable like few years.
Again, no control over the UK Wi-Fi, so just bear with us. So, AK, this is an interesting matchup, because you can make strong arguments that both guys need wins in different ways here. Like, you can argue that a loss doesn't really hurt Tom Aspinall as much as it would hurt Alexander Volkov right now, because Aspinall is kind of just getting started, and this is the heavyweight division, so a loss doesn't set him back too far. But Volkov is kind of in that position, is in an interesting position where he kind of needs to win this one if he wants to stay, you know, relevant in title contention in this heavyweight division. So do you agree with that? Do you think Volkov needs to win this fight more than Aspinall, or do you think Aspinall needs this because of the location, because the card is essentially built around him? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's that bad of a situation for Volkov. Like I said, That Derek Lewis fight is still always there on the horizon. There's big fights ahead for him. So I think win or lose, I think the UFC, again, they view him as a reliable top 10 guy. I think they really appreciate that he kind of you know, is willing to take on a guy like Aspinall, who's coming up, who, again, he doesn't have a lot to gain by beating him, as you kind of suggested, more to lose than to gain. So that I agree with. But I don't think it completely, you know, nerfs his chances of becoming, of challenging for a UFC title someday still. He's relatively, I'm going to say young. He's 33. He turned 33 last year. But, like, at heavyweight, that is young. That is, like, considered young. He has a lot of fights, of course, a lot of experience. So he has a lot of actual fight mileage. So in fight years, he's older, but it's weird. I just don't see him as someone who, like, you know, the UFC is looking at him like, oh, well, this is his last chance to run to the top. I don't know. I could see him again. He could fight Tuivasa someday. There's still fresh matches for him and fresh matchups that are in the top 10. There's rematch that could be had too. So I don't think it's quite that bad. Does he need it more than Aspinall? Sure, I would agree with that. But I don't think it's a big gap, because like you said, Aspinall, if he loses, he's really got that demeanor that you get the sense he'd be disappointed, he'd be hurt. Of course, he you know, it would suck. Everyone wants to win. Everyone wants to stay undefeated in the UFC and keep the streak going. But he would also be kind of like, well, I lost to a guy more experienced, longtime contender. I learned. He'd bounce back. He'd bounce back pretty strong. One of those fighters, classic. I'm going to learn more from my defeats than I am from my victories, guys. So definitely he doesn't need it as much, but I don't think the gap is that big. I don't think it's like it's do or die for Volkov or do or die for Aspinall. So that's kind of what I like about this, and what Jose kind of mentioned, like that this is just a really good, strong heavyweight contest that I think we can enjoy without worrying about necessarily like the consequences of what it means for both fighters.
It's a very good point. There are some stakes, but it's not like dire stakes. I mean, and just for Volkov, like, I'm not saying like he'll never fight for a title again, but considering where this division sits right now with the champion on the shelf, and then we got possible interim title fight, we got Stipe and Ty and John Jones and some of these other guys, Ciryl Gane still out there, you know, a loss here. I mean, it just makes the process a lot longer. So what do you think about that, Jose? Do you agree with AK that this is just kind of like, there's stakes because there's stakes in every fight, but these aren't like dire big time stakes that a loss just completely cripples one of these fighters from a championship and a rankings perspective?
Well, you completely broke up at the end of that. And I think I might've been frozen.
You're moving now. This is the best you've looked. Now you might be frozen. And now I can't hear AK.
The quality improved, but the foot, it was too strong. The quality is too strong.
are you back, Jose?
You're back, Jose.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back. Weird. We can hear you.
I didn't. All right, cool. I didn't even really do anything. I just shifted my thing around. What was the question I heard? Is there stakes? And then I kind of cut off.
It was basically the same question I asked AK. Is it it's not do or die, but is it? No. Do you feel like there aren't a lot of, like, there are stakes, but it's not dire for either guy?
No, it's not dire for either guy, especially for the heavyweight division. I mean, we've seen how many times has the UFC booked a heavyweight fight that isn't even the best fight of the card as a headlining act for fight nights. Like Jairzinho versus Augusto Sakai headlined a card. Walt Harris's headlines cards. Ciryl Gane was headlining cards on his up and up. It's weird that Ty Tuivasa hasn't really headlined a card since the JDS fight, if I remember correctly. But a loss isn't going to hurt either man. Volkov is always going to find a spot to fight, especially in Abu Dhabi with all of his fellow Russians. And Tom Aspinall is, what, not even 30? And if they keep going back to the UK, they're obviously going to need him in these high spots. No, it will be. The loser of this is obviously detrimental to them in the present time, because like no one wants an L on their record, but it's not like they're going to be banished out of the top 15 by any means.
Betting lines, like we said, according to our friends at DraftKings, Aspinall slight favorite, -120. Comeback on Alexander Volkov +100. All right, AK, time for your pick. How does this night end? Who gets their hand raised? Who's doing the post fight interview after?
Oh man, I'm going with the up and comer. People know me. I'm usually pretty conservative. I have been. I think our last couple of cards, I've gone with a lot of like Brazilian veterans. To mixed results. Some of the Brazilian veterans did pull it off and did fend off the fighters coming for the rankings. Some of them didn't. Some of them, like Edson Barbosa, was clearly outclassed by like a Bryce Mitchell. So I was way off on that one. But this time I'll go with the up and comer. I just like Tom Aspinall's game, and I think it's very true what he said, that, like, you know, people see the big knockouts. They did get to see him submit Arlovski, so they saw some of the grappling. He really is a well-rounded guy and someone with a super strong grappling game, and I think that's going to help him a lot with Volkov, because to fight a guy like Volkov, either you got to have that insane swanging and banging power like Derek Lewis, and, you know, be able to pull off a knockout at any moment. I don't know if Aspinall quite has that, but I think he's well-rounded. And I think, you know, because Volkov's he's a great striker, but also has some wrestling as well. So you really have to be able to deal with that. And I think Aspinall can. I think he's going to surprise some people who are thinking that, like, he might be outclassed in some areas. I think he's more a match for Volkov, and I think he has a slight power advantage, which is going to help him as well. So I think it's going to go to a decision. I do think Aspinall's finish streak ends here. I know a lot of people, probably the UFC included, are hoping for, you know, a finish somewhere in the first three rounds. But I think it's going to go the distance, and I think it'll be a fun fight. Maybe not like a fight of the year candidate, but again, I know I've been against this lately, but I think we'll see the mixing of the martial arts at a high level, and I think the crowd will be happy with that. Hopefully, unless they're expecting just an all-out slugfest, which I don't think is what we're going to get.
Is there a poll in there, AK? I didn't even ask you.
is there a poll in there? Guys, is there a poll in there? Of course there's a poll. It says, what fight are you most excited for at UFC London? And Volkov Aspinall, Arnold Hooker, and Pimblett Vargas, and other. I left other. I should have just put like Molly McCann and Luana Carolina, but there's a lot of, I actually think it's a pretty solid card. I know we're going to break it down more in a second, but so I went with those top three fights. I know people are talking about Pimblett a lot. So right now, Arnold versus Hooker leading at pretty strong 48%. So a lot of people looking forward to that one.
That is a great fight. We'll talk about that next. Jose, who wins the main event?
I'm going to pick Tom Aspinall, but I was pretty 50-50 going back and forth, because Volkov is just, like, Tom Aspinall uses the phrase octagon time a lot, and that is not something you can overlook. Like, yeah, we're all impressed with Tom Aspinall not being able to go, well, not being able to, well, still a phrase, but not getting past the second round. Alexander Volkov has fought, like, how many main events through five rounds, how many three-round fights? Like, octagon time is legit. But if you've watched what Alexander Volkov normally does, he likes to keep his fights at the end of the stick, you know, like with that jab. His arms are so long. He basically fights how everyone wants Stefan Struve to fight. He uses his reach spectacularly and just keeps you at range with kick, side kicks, jabs, combinations. Doesn't do a lot of grappling, honestly, but he just whittles you away until, like, possibly overing shatters your nose, and then you kind of succumb. He whittles you down and then breaks you with volume. Tom Aspinall has been training with Rico Verhoeven specifically for that, to figure out how to get into that jab. He's trained with Tyson Fury, obviously. One of, like, how tall is he? 6'9"? Like, one of the, he uses his reach better than anyone in, like, the history of the heavyweight division in the last, like, 20 years. So I think Tom Aspinall is putting together a game plan. And this isn't anything he told me. This is just what I've seen and, like, footage I've seen. I think his team is putting together a game plan to beat Volkov tomorrow in London, and I think that's going to come through. I think he's going to get a finish, but I think it's going to be in the third round or later. So I think his streak of inside the second round ends, but I still think he gets the finish, because he's going to eventually get into that jab, and he's going to eventually do what you got to do. And he said something to media day. He goes, I don't need to have just power to beat Volkov. I can beat him on the ground, I can beat him grappling, and I can get inside and jab and beat him striking. I do have the power too, but that's not what I need to rely on, like various other heavyweights. So I think, is Volkov a better fighter? Maybe, but I think Aspinall is putting together a game plan that is just tailor-made to fight a long-rangey guy. And I think he's been doing that for a long time, and that's why he really wants to fight Alexander Volkov and not Marcin Tybura.
Yeah, it's a good matchup. I don't really have much to add to what both of you said. I think this is sort of Aspinall's coming out party. The one thing I do worry about in this fight is that it's like Volkov gets his flow going, and if he does, this could be a really boring fight. Like, it could end up being that way. Like, not as slow as last week's main event, but we could see something very similar if Aspinall can't get his game plan going. But I have a good feeling he will. I think the crowd will be behind him. I think that does a lot for him. And, you know, fighting in the Apex is cool, but getting to fight in front of your home crowd and get all, like, that energy, it's a whole different ball game. And I think, like, that's just going to ramp him up.
Like, something I don't think enough has been talked about, this is Aspinall's first fight ever in the UFC in front of fans, correct? Like, he's only had Apex fights and such, or Fight Island fights. So let's throw out the main event. Like, oh, cool, he's main event in his first fight. It's in the O2. That place is going to be filled by the first fight of the night. And it's like, we talk a lot about like where fights are stacked and like, oh, is this fight too low? This fight too high? If you look at the layout of this card, it's perfect. The first fight is that flyweight fight, and that everyone's going to come to watch that. And then every single fight just builds from there. This is a perfectly built card. Is it the most stacked card? It's good. But if you go from one up, they have laid this out perfectly. But the UFC has that is.
Yeah, I like this card a lot. It's very comparable to last week's card in a lot of ways, where there's some good matchups. There's some good prospects that you would say have favorable matchups and can get their big moment and the, you know, the big response and the big pop from the crowd. So we like that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But let's talk about this co-main event, AK. We got Arnold Allen back for the first time since the Sodiq Yusuf fight. I know the UFC has seen a lot in him because they wanted to book him some really big fights later on in the year. Unfortunately, he had a hand injury that kept him out until right about now. He's cleared and ready to go. And his first opponent in his return is the returning Dan Hooker to the featherweight division after a long run at 155. Some success, some struggles down the stretch, but look good on the scale today. Weighed in with the sunglasses on, good energy. This is going to be a hell of a fight, my man. Your thoughts on this co-main event between Arnold Allen and Dan Hooker, which, by the way, according to our friends at DraftKings, a total pick'em, minus 110s for both guys.
Yeah, and I think that's understandable. I mean, look, Arnold Allen, I don't know if there's anyone who's on a win streak, has his kind of win streak, who's had his kind of start to his UFC career that has kind of had less buzz, and that's not his fault. There's been health problems, so he hasn't been able to get in there. He's missing sort of a big signature win. Gilbert Melendez should have been that, but I think Gilbert was probably being viewed as a little bit past his, you know, his best before date, unfortunately, when that fight happened. And that was a nice win, too. Like, that was a really good win. But I don't know. It didn't quite vault Arnold Allen into, like, not household name, but that upper tier of, like, you know, UFC notoriety. He's also lacking finishes. Now, that shouldn't matter. I wish that didn't matter, but when you're only winning decisions, again, it's just, if you're the UFC, it's hard for them to package you in a certain way and to market you. So it's weird. He's got a quirky personality, which I like. I think he's got a great look. So you have the makings of someone who should be a star at featherweight. We do have him ranked, of course. He's where is he in our rankings? Number 11, which sounds a bit weird for a guy. Again, he's 8-0 in the UFC. He is 8-0. He's beaten Sodiq Yusuf, I think. He's got some really good, Mads Brunel, who just main evented Bellator. Sodiq was his last win. So he's beaten good veteran names. It's weird. It really feels like he's missing that signature moment. I don't know if you asked anyone, most fans, I'm sure a lot of the media would have some, most fans, what is like the signature moment of his career so far in the UFC? Nothing's jumping out. I could be way off base on this. I don't know, Jose. So that's, I know I only talked about the Allen aspect of it, but you have a better memory for these things than I do. So I don't know if I'm forgetting something about Arnold Allen. I should be giving him more credit as far as where he should be, like, fame-wise.
I think,
yeah, go ahead.
It's what's hurting. Like, we all like Arnold Allen's personality. Like, he's been on the MMA Hour, obviously, and, like, we all have our Slack groups. We're like, oh, this guy is, like, his humor is so dry, and everyone likes him. Didn't have a great media day. I don't think that translates well. I don't think his, like, humor translates well when you're supposed during fight week. Like, take advantage of your mic time. Like, get people interested. Like, it's one thing to go on the MMA hour and talk about like gas station showers and honking at sheep and everything like that. But when you're about to go fist fight someone named like Dan Hooker, get people excited. Like, if someone's like, "Oh, what do you think about this fight?" And he's just like, "Yeah, it's good." Like, come on, man. Like, yeah, Arnold Allen is so, he just seemed like not annoyed, but like, I don't know what, because he's fought on big cards before. He's fought Gilbert Melendez. That was the card with like John Jones Santos, Masvidal Askren, like Jan, and I mean not Jan. Like, he's fought on these big cards, and I don't know what it is. And like, apparently I was like if you watch I saw a little snippet of, they did one of those face-offs that BT does where they have them both sit in a chair and then like the guy in the middle and they have them like talk to each other like boxing does. Remember Masvidal and Darren Till did that. And they did that with Arnold Allen and Hooker, and Arnold Allen's energy was just very low in terms of like you could tell Dan would like knew what he was doing. He's like, and it felt like Dan was holding back because he didn't want to just like kind of not talk crap, but like hype up a fight against someone that's not overly interested in doing that. Cause then he would just look like a bully. And it just looked like Arnold was like twitchy and didn't want to be there. Just weird energy. But Arnold is like, in terms of martial arts, Arnold Allen is so good. Just weird energy this week.
Yeah, especially compared to how some of the others came off on Media Day. Like, obviously, like, because you mentioned the quirky personality and kind of like that kind of dry humor. Tom Aspinall has the same kind of like dry humor a bit. But I thought his Media Day was so good. I thought he came off like so intelligent, so engaging. Like I said, didn't have that disconnect like Arnold Allen had. And then you had like Molly McCann, of course, is just hilarious and always lively and the best Media Day roasting you over the Nandos. I mean, that's, if anyone hasn't seen that clip, please watch Molly McCann roasting Jose over the Nandos, which you volunteered for. You were asking for, you solicited advice for how to order this.
Okay,
this
so institution. Going off of that, everyone can go to my Twitter and see I've rectified that twice.
Oh, like, okay.
Molly McCann sat down with me in the lobby of the hotel and goes, "Lad, this is what you need to order." Here's and like stuff. Literally broke down what I needed. I took that video of us, went to Nando's down the road, me and Pizzi, Pizzi Carroll, our former colleague, and I literally just like watched the video and just ordered what she said and then posted a video being like, is this better, Molly? Is this what you wanted? And she accepted my apology and said, "We're good. You're doing better." So the beef is squashed, and I had my Nandos.
I just want to read one of the comments. Buffo on the beat says, "What stands out to Arnold Allen is that he's a decision machine, LOL. He's like plain microwaved oatmeal." Well, I don't know if I agree with that, but I just read that comment to sort of show, I think that is somewhat the public opinion of Arnold Allen. If you haven't watched all his fights, again, if you're just kind of looking at his record, and like I said, even some of his fights, yeah, sure. All you see is a guy who's a very good fighter. He wins fights. Where is that next level spark? But beating a guy like Dan Hooker, if he beats him in impressive fashion, maybe it shuts me right up, and this is what we're talking, this is what we're looking for. But I don't know. I understand why there's not around him specifically, why there isn't quite that buzz every week yet. But hey, him and Hooker, 41% in the poll so far. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the lack of finishes. I mean, he's so good. He's very Tim Duncan-esque, like, where he's very effective and he does everything like by the book. Sure. He's very fundamentally sound, if you will, but still very effective. But he just hasn't had, like, the Mads Brunel fight was the last time he's gotten a finish. And the other thing is kind of the inactivity that he's had.
Yep.
Just, you know, 2019, I think he fought twice, but then he was out for like 14 or 15 months. And now he's out for almost a year again, heading into this fight. Like, just when he's starting to build that momentum, something happens and we don't see him for a year and it kind of halts it. And that's how MMA is. This news cycle doesn't stop. You get that win over Sadiq Youssef, you're on top of the world. Everyone's matchmaking all these crazy fights for you. The UFC is trying to put you in big spots, but then the injuries happen and you're out for a while and we don't get to see you, because I know for a fact they tried to book a main event between him and Calvin Kattar for like November, December-ish. They tried, maybe even January. That was the fight the UFC wanted. They wanted Allen versus Kattar, main event. They were targeted November, December, January. He just couldn't get cleared with the hand injury. So Giga Chikadze stepped in. Kattar got his big win, and here we are. Now, obviously, Arnold has this is a very important fight for him, AK. Very important fight. It's probably Gilbert Melendez is a name, but like you said, it's one of those things where kind of like the passing of the torch kind of a fight. I feel like right now, like this is a huge opportunity for him. You get Dan Hooker, a guy that most people know who watch the sport or have watched sport for the last couple of years. This is a massive opportunity for Arnold Allen. Is it not? Like this is that signature fight. This is the one that can get you over that hump.
It's huge. I still worry that if he gets another solid workmanlike Tim Duncan's, you know, San Antonio Spurs style win, that he might not get the credit that he should be getting, because people will say, oh, well, Hooker, you know, hey, he's in a slump anyway. You know, he wasn't exactly like lighting a fire at lightweight before he made the decision to drop back down. Plus he's coming back down to this weight class. Oh, maybe it's the, you know, having to do the weight cut again, 10 extra pounds that took it out of him. I worry, and I know I'm setting the stage for it now, so I'm probably part of the problem, that this will become, oh, well, Dan Hooker didn't look great as opposed to Arnold Allen looked really good. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll be a little bit of both. Maybe it'll be like, well, Dan Hooker didn't look great, but Arnold Allen looked amazing. Maybe we get a fight of the year candidate. That would probably be a great outcome for Arnold Allen, win or lose, frankly, if he was involved in like a 3-round war. I'm sure he'd prefer to get another decision that maybe people aren't talking about. But like we said, he needs that moment, and him going to war with Hooker in London would just be amazing. I think it would be amazing, win or lose. So, you know, any kind of win is preferable, but close behind, I think a very, very competitive fight is ideal. Will that happen? I'm not sure. Again, I'm just kind of give my pick here. I'm definitely leaning towards a comfortable Allen decision, and that's no disrespect to Hooker. I just think he's just been fighting tough guys. I mean, I think Hooker's a really, really good fighter. I think he's short of the elite. I think Arnold Allen is an elite fighter at 145 pounds, and he just isn't being recognized as that yet. I think I think you could put Allen in there with anyone in the top seven, and I think he'd be very, very competitive at 145 pounds. I don't know if I'd say the same for Hooker just yet, but we'll see. He could be a new man. Maybe this is the weight class he should have stuck at all along, but I'm a little skeptical.
Do you agree with that, Jose? Are you going with Arnold Allen, or do you think Dan Hooker can come back to this division and make a big statement and insert his name into these discussions for big fights and moving up that ladder towards a title fight?
Not only do I disagree, I think this is going to be one-way traffic for Dan Hooker. I just think Dan Hooker is a better striker all around than Arnold Allen is very good. He's very, very talented at fist-fighting human beings. I just think the only thing that he does better than Dan Hooker is he has not taken as much damage as Dan Hooker. So if Dan Hooker's body like gives out on him, like because he's like the Edson Barboza fight, the Dustin Poirier fight, like getting knocked out by Michael Chandler, getting submitted by Islam Makhachev, everyone I just named is like some of the greatest fighters of all time. I don't think Arnold Allen is at that level right now. He is so good, but I think the way he comes out hot, like he can blitz you, like with those signature blitzes he has, that you're going to blitz Dan Hooker. Like that's not what you want to do. Dan Hooker will just plant a knee in your chin if you run on in him. So I just think Dan Hooker has fought in supremely better competition than Arnold Allen. If they fought 3 years from now, Arnold Allen probably wins. But right now, I think like Dan Hooker also said, like he didn't go up from featherweight because the weight cut was hard. He went up because like there were other things going on in his life and his coaches wanted him to go. So he went up and he found success and he stayed there. But in the back of his mind, he always wanted to go back down. He said the weight cut is not hard and it's not the reason he left. He's 6 feet. Who else? Like he's the same height as Giga, and Giga's making 145 pretty easily. So I think the weight cut is not going to be an issue. He's fought in 5 rounds with freaking Dustin Poirier. So I just think right now Dan Hooker gets it done. And I think it's going to be I think it's going to be one-way traffic for Dan Hooker, and then we're going to have a new fun, exciting, like, freaking Dan Hooker, Giga Chikadze, Dan Hooker, Calvin Kattar, Dan Hooker, like, Korean Zombie, Dan Ige, Josh Emmett, like, sign me up. And then I think eventually, if they keep on the way, we're going to have that conversation of Dan Hooker fighting a teammate, which would be probably a big problem for the City Kickboxing boys.
Wow, I didn't expect that answer. I'm kind of in the middle of you two guys. I think we're going to get a typical Arnold Allen type of performance where he's going to get a nice ovation for the victory. But I think it's just going to be, this is going to be more of a John Stockton performance where it's just super solid. Like it's just fun.
Just your, so basically Arnold Allen is like the featherweight British version of Neil Magny at this point. Just gets it done and wins, and just wins and wins and wins. And Arnold Allen is so good, and Neil Magny is so good. But I just think eventually you get to those like uber violent fighters, and you need, like, how would I put this? Like, being technically great will get you so far in the UFC, but eventually you fight someone that is just a monster, like someone that will die in there. And you, maybe Arnold Allen has that. We just don't know. And I really do think having like crazy willpower to like fight through a broken nose or like a shattered knee is something you need in the UFC. And maybe Arnold Allen has that. You just haven't, we haven't seen it. And that's not his fault. He's just winning pretty comfortably. So I could be completely wrong. I just think I've seen more to sway me into picking Dan Hooker pretty easily in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Allen goes out there and just tries to brawl with Dan, it's not
a bad night.
It's a bad night for him. But maybe the crowd will like entice him to do that. But I just don't see it. I what I'm intrigued by is the third round, because I think I think Dan's going to get off to a pretty good start. Allen, I think we'll kind of figure it out in the second round. But both guys have shown that they can fade a little bit down the stretch. And if Allen can wrestle, if Allen can grapple, if Allen can start landing some takedowns, it could be a tough night for Dan Hooker. So interesting matchup. I can't wait to see it. I have a million questions about it, and that's why it's so good. Co-main event is going to lead into this main event. I'm intrigued by it. I'm going to go Arnold Allen by a close decision, but I think it's a pretty competitive fight. I do. I think it'll be I think Allen just does enough down the stretch to win, but I think this is going to be one of those fights where Dan Hooker, yeah, it's going to suck to have another L on the record, but I don't think his stock's going to drop too much from this one. And I think some of those exciting fights that Jose mentioned would still be on the table. So that is the co-main event. I mean, there's a lot of really good fights. Paddy Pimblett, Rodrigo Vargas. I mean, Pimblett's a massive favorite. All good.
Is he the biggest favorite on the card, or would that be...
I believe he is the biggest favorite on the card. Yes, Gunnar Nelson is the second biggest favorite, tied with Ilya Topuria, -550.
Yeah,
but Paddy Pimblett is a -600 against Rodrigo Vargas. So I mean, the entrance. If the UFC doesn't show Paddy Pimblett's entrance, then there is something terribly wrong. Like, enough is enough. We need to see this. Gunnar Nelson is back against Takashi Sato. Molly McCann versus Luana Carolina. Jai Herbert versus Ilya Topuria. That rounds up the main card, and then like a really solid slate of prelims. Muhammad Mukhayev versus Cody Durden is the first fight of the card, which is super, a really good fight. A little bit of heat on this one between these two guys. A lot of talk back and forth on social media, and Muhammad Mukhayev, from all accounts, I mean, if you watch just his amateur fights, his world championship fights on the amateur scene, seeing what he's done as a professional, just running through guys, a serious problem at 125. So I'm excited to see how that translates into the octagon against Cody Durden.
This is all on ESPN Plus, right?
Yes.
And you guys still get commercials on ESPN Plus?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's horrible.
Not only do we get commercials, we get like the same three
every time.
I mean, we have commercials, but we have it on free. It's on cable. Like, we have it on TSN up here in Canada. So I understand why we have commercials. You guys shouldn't get commercials.
You get free healthcare. You don't get commercials. You can go to Tim Hortons.
No, we get commercials.
What else you want to brag about?
We get commercials. We're just not paying for a, we don't have to pay for a subscription service and get commercials. That's bizarre. That's just horrible.
America has the Stanley Cup, which is all that really matters.
And has had it for a long time.
No. Say it again, AK. I didn't hear that.
I said it has had it for a long time. Tampa Bay. Who knew Tampa Bay would become the epicenter of hockey someday? Oh my god!
Epicenter of sports, honestly.
God, it makes no sense.
Don't get me started. I've seen the Michael Chiesa, Justin Gaethje commercial 7,000 times, and that's not an exaggeration. I've seen that commercial 7,000 times because of ESPN Plus, and that was for a year straight. That was a commercial on every spot set. Every spot set. Every time they went to break, that commercial was in the set. Every single time. I've seen it 7,000 times. So I'm glad to see. And I it's a fun commercial. Don't get me wrong, but I'm glad we're moving on. So
it's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, real quick before you go to the peeps, get your questions ready. Let me just address this one real quick. No new opponent for Nathaniel Wood. No new opponent for Nathaniel Wood. Vince Morales, if you didn't know, was sick on the trip over. As soon as he got off the plane, he spiked a fever, couldn't kick it, and he wanted to go. He wanted to start cutting weight. He still wanted to fight, but he wasn't cleared. So that fight is off. I confirmed that the UFC was trying to find somebody. Like, they could find somebody like immediately, they might have been able to make it happen, but that lasted maybe an hour. And at that point, the UFC made the decision to just rebook this one down the road. So tough for Nathaniel Wood. I know how much this one meant to him, how badly he wanted to fight on this card. He had already lost another opponent because the opponent is from Ukraine and decided, I'm going to go fight for my country, so I'm not going to fight in the octagon, which kudos to that guy. But yeah, tough one for Nathaniel Wood. But before you go to the peeps, Jose, low-key banger, what do you got?
It's weird that no one's mentioned Paul Craig versus Nikita Krylov. Someone's going to bed in that fight. Like, how many, they have what, like 30-something, 40-something wins between them, and one's gone to a decision, maybe two. And I'm pretty sure it's the one that AK was like, there's no way Johnny Walker and Nikita Krylov goes to the decision, and then that's exactly what happens. And I always have to bring that up once a previous show,
I believe, so. I also said that for Krylov and Glover Teixeira, or it was that one instead of the Johnny Walker one. I'm not sure.
I think it was
– or both. I'm pretty sure both.
Regardless. Yeah, same thing.
And but, they both went to the decision.
I think that's the fight. I mean – Krylov is obviously ties to the Ukraine, and Paul Craig gave him all the shout that he could. I think it's going to be that fight. And Paul Craig is really, really excited to fight Nikita Krylov, to like show off his MMA grappling and this and that and striking and everything. I think that fight is pretty fantastic, and not enough people are talking about it.
That is a great fight. That is a great answer. It is not the correct answer. AK, I have a feeling you're going to give us the correct answer. What's the low-key banger?
This is a really good card. Do I have to pick this one? This is a really good card. I'm super excited about, you mentioned the Mokaev Durden fight. I mean, I have kind of my own reasons for it, obviously. I'm excited about Mokaev as a prospect. I thought he had a good media day as well. Enjoyed that. Yeah. Just the intrigue of a guy who has fought so much, has such extensive amateur experience. You don't really see that in MMA. MMA is not like boxing where you fight like whatever, like 100 amateur fights. Like, it's rare you see guys enter and fight with even like 10 amateur fights, right? It's like maybe 4 or 5, and then if you have success, you're going pro, right? I mean, you just go. Mokaev has like 30, some 30 amateur fights. He's undefeated. I'm sure some of them are undocumented too. And then he fought for Brave, so he was already fighting a high level before the UFC. He's 21 years old. That's crazy. This guy's 21 years old. Now Durden's the right opponent. There's heat there. I admit I will admit bias here. I'm going to be a member of the media. I shouldn't be biased, but I did like Mokaev stepping up after I was the victim of, I and other Asians were the victim of a drive-by racism from from Cody Durden at the last card. So, you know, there's some personal investment here, but really just on paper, even if you guys don't care about that stuff, this is a good fight. This is a really good fight. And a very big test for Mokaev. I think he's going to kill, you know, crush Cody Durden, but Cody Durden's pretty tough. So, I see the odds heavily in favor of Mokaev, but when it's your first UFC fight and you're such a young guy, there's just a lot of things to consider. So should be a showcase, great way to start off the preliminary portion of the card, could be a guy who's a future contender at 125 pounds. So I really like that one.
That is also a really good answer, but also the wrong answer. I thought you're gonna say it's Jack Short, Timur Valiyev. That is absolutely the pick. Come on, that is. But and I have to say that. Fights being slept on and fighters being slept on. I think Jack Shore might be the most slept on fighter on this entire card. Everyone thinks that Timur is just going to go out there and enroll him. I don't get it. I don't understand that. I think this is brilliant matchmaking. This is exactly the fight you want to book. And if it's just interesting matchmaking. Jack Shore, like, we've been waiting to see, like, is he a top 15 guy? And I feel like he should have been fighting ranked guys like two fights ago. Now he gets Timur Valiyev, who's super solid. I still think the Hione Barcelos fight was a little sus. I scored that one a draw, but in the end, this is great matchmaking. We're going to see just how good Jack Shore really is, and I feel like he's being slept on in a big way. Some money is coming in on Jack Shore now. Timur Valiyev is still the slight favorite at minus 120. Jack Shore at plus 100, according to DraftKings, but God, that is such a good fight.
If he wins, he'll be tied for the second longest streak at 135 pounds in the UFC. He'll be tied with TJ Dillashaw. He'll be five straight behind only Aljamain and Merab at six. So that's pretty crazy.
The only thing I'll say on that fight is Jack Shore. I don't think you can tell through the screen. Jack Shore did not look good on that scale. Like, I looked like he had cut a crazy amount of weight the night before.
I can't wait for that fight, but we'll see what happens. Let's go to some questions here. Jay Gabriel, even though he isn't signed by the UFC, would you guys would have liked to see Ilya Topuria's brother against Nathaniel Wood? So if you saw on social media, once the news came out from that this fight was scratched, that Vince Morales wasn't going to be able to fight, first round management, Malki Kawa actually put it out on Twitter that Ilya Topuria's older brother was there. He had medicals done. He could have stepped in and fought Nathaniel Wood. He just fought March 12th, got a win. He's 4-1. I think he's got two straight wins now. So they thought, why not just slide him in there just to give Nathaniel Wood a fight? That didn't happen. Are you okay with this? Like, it sucks for Nathaniel Wood to not get his moment, AK, but I don't know. Like, a couple days notice after preparing for a certain guy and then having to prepare for another guy on short notice to have it switched up with a guy you like probably haven't seen at all. Like, Tapology didn't even have his recent win on their, like, on his list of fights. Like, that's just kind of how unknown he is at this point. So I don't really blame Nathaniel Wood. I mean, other than that, I just didn't know what other options there could have been for him.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar. I'm looking at the topology as well now. I'm not super familiar with Alexandra Topuria. No, I don't think they should have done this. I know, yeah, if just to keep Nathaniel Wood in the card, sure. I assume they would have had to change it to a catch weight. I'm just looking here. It doesn't look like Topuria's brother, Alexandra Topuria, has fought lower than 139 pounds. He's in a catch weight on there. His opponents also are, the last guy he fought was 1-9. The guy before that, 7-18-1. So, yeah, look, we've seen worse things happen. What was the guy? Martin Sano stepped in to fight. Who did he fight? Semi the Jedi, Semmelsberger, and that shouldn't have happened either. So, people, they do these things. I just hope they can get another fight for Nathaniel Wood soon. I don't think you'd. Of course, London. You want to find London. That'd be such a cool environment to compete in, but I don't think you need to be throwing guys like Topuria's brother into the fire like that. So I'm fine with that not being put together.
All right, next question. Chandler Walker. I mean, we got to talk about Paddy Pimblett because he's created a lot of buzz for this card, not only for the name, but him and Ilya Topuria got after it, and that created a lot of headlines. So Israel Adesanya, Jose, came out and did his preview of the card and said that, you know, he likes what Paddy's doing. He's talking a smack, but he's backing it up. And then his co-host played this clip of Paddy saying, I like Israel, but, you know, I just don't like the dances he does when he comes out to these fights. And Izzy's like, I dare him to try to do that. And then he went out and said, Paddy's getting fed a bum. He's getting fed a bum in Rodrigo Vargas. So if Paddy goes out there and wins, and he's heavily favored to do so in an exciting fashion, like, how high of a step do we take him, or do we just slow roll him and put him in exciting opportunities?
Nah, if he wins here, just shoot that man straight, put the rocket on him. Because, like, we all talk about, like, the thing that was missing in this pandemic era is when you get that, like, Darren Till winning in Liverpool, Connor winning in Dublin, Israel Adesanya winning in, like, that part of the world against Robert Whittaker. You need those fighters winning. You need the image of them winning and the crowd going bananas around them. Like, make no mistake. This week has been the Paddy Pimblett show. Like everyone, our numbers show it. The fan interest shows it. I brought this up immediately when I landed. I had to catch a cab to my hotel. It was like an hour away, so I had like a lot of time to fill. And my cab driver was like, what are you doing in the UK? I was like, oh, here to cover the UFC. Old man goes, don't care for the UFC. It's not my thing. Tell me about Paddy the Batty. I know who he is. So that should tell you, like, this is the Paddy the Batty weekend. If he wins, which he should, I give him someone like a veteran name that is probably on the way out soon.
I just kind of giggled because I saw AK's.
Don't worry about it. I don't want to acknowledge
the former WCW wrestler Billy Kidman.
I don't want to acknowledge this troll. It's trolling there.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be nauseated.
Really well done.
I want to say, if Paddy wins, Don't know if it happens, but I want to see him fight someone like the winner of Cowboy Lozon.
Oh, wow. Yeah, actually, I don't mind that.
That's actually not bad.
When you were saying like jump him up a lot, I was kind of ready to retort like I'm you know
people, I'm not saying yeah. top 15 because right. lightweight like don't get like Gamrot yeah. is like 14 yeah. like
but name wise you're saying like name wise
yeah I would give him someone like Cowboy or Lozon or like if like obviously like if Jeremy Stevens or like Diego Sanchez was here like something like that like give him a better name.
I remember people in our matchmaking show were saying like Jim Miller after the first win. I'm like, sure. That's gonna.
Why not?
I don't know. I don't think that's gonna happen, but it certainly it would fit the bill of the kind of guys that Jim Miller himself has been fighting lately. And Jim Miller, of course, would like that because I mean, how much hype would there be around that? That could.
Why not? What like in a couple of years, Paddy Jim Miller at UFC 300? Wouldn't hate it if Paddy keeps winning.
God, that's so far down the road though.
MMA it goes quick.
Will any of us even be here?
Just stay. We'll here. If you're Paddy Pimblett and his team, you know, take Jose's advice, take that kind of a step up, but just do yourself a favor. Stay away from Ilya Topuria. Stay far away from that man. Do not fight him. Do not fight that guy. I don't care what the offer is. Do not fight Ilya Topuria. Well, that is a bad night for you.
Ilya Topuria has his hands full of Jai Herbert. Jai Herbert has fought like his first three fights have been like unranked guys, but like some of the best unranked guys the UFC has. He has not had an easy fight. He's also very tall. If you watch his media day, he was about. He's like, you guys are wasting a lot of energy on each other. Like, I'm gonna mess this dude up anyway. So, I think Luke Poirier has his hands full of a very tall, confident Jai Herbert on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a really good
like
fight.
His MMA hour appearance, all he does talk about Paddy. I'm like, bro, you have to fight Jai Herbert. Like, let's focus on that. He's very good at fighting.
Yeah, it's a good fight. Do we have any more questions? Fire him off.
Well, I was saying, Guram Kutatlatse, maybe a Topuria proxy. No,
maybe maybe because for a while I was really into like keeping them apart because at one point I wanted Darren and Khamzat to fight and then I wanted the co-main event to be Paddy and Guram, like the two Liverpudlians versus you know, because Khamzat and Guram are teammates, so that's what I wanted at one point. But Guram's obviously keeps getting hurt. He hasn't fought since he beat Gamrot, and that win is just aged beautifully. So maybe down the road.
I know there's a lot of I know Terrence McKinney wanted the Paddy Pimblett fight. So.
Yeah. I like it.
At this point, I actually don't mind it. I don't mind that fight right now. But I mean, because I think even if like win or lose for Terrence, I don't think it really affects him that much. I think people just got to watch him fight regardless. So I don't think he's one of those guys who I think, you know, could kind of like a Derek Lewis where like anytime you see him fight against anybody, you're just going to be excited for it. And Paddy's probably going to be in a similar sense, but let's see. Last question, Terrence Leverett. Jose, when Molly wins and she does the post-fight interview, can you give her a DJ air horn salute?
Do you remember you guys? So Terrence is clearly a fan of the Ace, the former show, The A-Side. You guys remember that episode?
Oh yeah.
She would constantly want to keep bringing up the air and just go and do like a finger gun. So yeah, if I have it, why not?
There you go. All right. So Jose's going to take off. We're going to wrap this thing up here. Some early morning preview show action. It's my fault. We were actually supposed to start like 10 minutes prior, but it's my fault because I can't read for some reason. I thought we were going to go at noon Eastern, but you know, I forgot we're in London and I just, again, can't read. So we started a little bit late. All you crazies, the day after St. Patrick's Day coming on here at 9 a.m. Eastern time and watching this feed, you are the real MVPs. Tomorrow, we'll be back at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time for the People's Pre-Fight Show. I believe it's just myself and Jed Meshew. 12:30 Eastern. Prelims start at 1 p.m. Eastern for the People's Pre-Fight Show. Because prelims start at 1:30 now that we lost one fight. But the main card starts at 4 p.m. Eastern. And then Jed and I will probably go on Twitter Spaces and do some stuff there as well. Casey Lydon's fight is coming up tomorrow. So a lot going on there. We will keep you posted on where, how we can watch this fight and provide updates for you. I don't know if we have any answers to that yet, but if we don't, we will let you know soon. But you can watch Casey's Walking the Walk Part 1 video on MMAfighting.com, sort of his journey to get to this point. And then he's going to get in there and freaking fight tomorrow. So much respect for that guy. So proud of Casey Lydon. And then we got ceremonial weigh-ins coming up as well. So look for clips and video of the ceremonial weigh-ins for UFC London coming up on MMA Fighting's YouTube channel and on MMAfighting.com. So with that being said, I am Mike. That is Jose. That is AK. Thanks for watching. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you later on.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.